So today we have a special guest with us. Emily Montai is a multi-hyphenate writer, director, producer, editor based in Berlin. Her feature film, Berlin Loop, is doing the festival circuit this year. And she's here to talk to us today about time loops.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Hello. It's lovely to meet you.
Yeah, really nice to meet you too. This is very exciting.
Wait, so where did you guys initially meet?
I think it was at EFM.
Yeah, it was in Berlin. I'm trying to think how.
Listening to your podcast so much, I feel like we've known each other. It's that parasocial relationship.
Yeah. Well, same, because I read your newsletter. So you're like telling me that you went traveling. And I'm like, we've already talked about this.
You guys are part of each other's media mix during the regular. Yeah.
So Emily and Jenny, the producer of Berlin Loop, are who we got into the Forbes Villa with. Of Forbes Villa fame.
Yes. In Hannah's rendition, Jenny and I are like these greedy networking mongrels who are just trying to like wheel and deal our way in. And she's like this innocent little dove who's like, I'm just befriending people.
Yeah, just breezing in there. Yeah.
Maybe that is how it was. I don't remember.
No, that's not how it was. For me, it was more, I was finishing lunch and I got this text from you that was like, if you get to the taxi in 6 minutes, you can come to the Forbes Villa. I was like, okay. Yeah, so I saw Berlin Loop at Berlin, which was amazing to see it there with a lot of the cast and crew. And then you're now taking it to America.
Yeah, we are going on a little cross-continental road trip. We're screening it in Los Angeles, Portland, Minneapolis, New York, and Delaware. The city is called Wilmington, but nobody knows what that is, okay. So I'm saying Delaware. And then London, before we come back to Berlin and take it to the Berlin Sci-Fi Film Festival.
Amazing. There's quite a range of types of festivals that you're going to, because the film actually covers a lot of, like, it's a sci-fi, but it's also time travel, and it's also a bike film.
Yeah. Well, we're doing kind of community screenings that deal with some of the different aspects of the film. So in LA, we're actually playing at a techno night.
Oh, cool.
It's outside of LA in this town called Victorville, and my friend organizes a techno night. So we're like starting off the evening with some culture, and we're going to do a panel about Berlin solidarity and leftist culture. And then we're just doing a regular screening in LA on the 19th. I don't know if you'll still be there, Hannah, but it's on the 19th of September.
I will be. Will I be there? I might be there. I'll be near that. I might be in San Francisco. I hope I'll be there. I would love to see it there.
That one is going to be associated with its bike themes. There's a bike riding event that happens that week in LA called Ciclovia, which is like big major streets in the city get closed down to cars. So it's just bikes and pedestrians and like any sort of, you know, human friendly transport.
That's so interesting that it's such a like bike themed. Yeah, because I mean that is obviously such a big thing in the film. Like it's central to the plot, but it's not the first thing that I would have necessarily thought of in terms of places that you'd be playing.
I think what bike culture represents to us in terms of Berlin and the movie is an alternative DIY team sport kind of way of being. So there's, you know, bikes in the movie, there's skateboarding, and like the whole punk culture that comes with skateboarding is kind of the whole vibe of like culturally. It's grassroots. Bike clubs and the idea of like fixing your bikes together at a bike kitchen and this kind of solidarity idea around bikes is, I think, really represented in the film. So we thought that would be a good way to target an audience. And if you're doing a small film and you have basically no money to do press, you want to like target a very, very specific niche to start with so that you're not trying to like, you know, plaster your movie on billboards, which is a little bit out of your price range.
Of course, yeah, because it's such a big and universal subculture that exists everywhere in terms of, you know, biking. Yeah, that's sensible.
Do you want to explain a little bit about what the film is about? Because we've obviously seen it. We just
launched straight into it, yeah.
Yeah, sure. The movie follows a young cleaning woman. She's about 20. Her name is Fatma. And she's really sick of her job. It's very boring and repetitive. And one day she sees a beautiful orange Peugeot bike and she decides to pick the lock and steal it. And little does she know that this bike belongs to the head of Berlin's bike theft mafia and that she is now being launched into a world where she has to steal bikes with the gang and she's kind of under his thumb. She discovers a time loop that allows her to go back to the moment before she stole the bike and kind of have another chance at figuring out how to deal with this underground bike theft world. And every time she goes through the time loop, she kind of gets herself in deeper. She tries to kind of beat the gang and outsmart them in some way. And instead, she kind of sinks more into selfishness, let's say.
She's such a classic time loop protagonist in that sense as well, right? Where it's someone who's really stuck in a situation.
Yeah.
To start with, but then also like literally being stuck in that time loop situation, right?
I wanted the character to have more agency than some time loop characters, because a lot of them the time loop starts over.
Yeah,
there's a point that they can't get beyond, and I wanted her to choose to go into the time loop every time. She chooses it, she feels like she has agency, and then she starts to actually try to plan and take advantage of it. The more she gets into it, her lesson is kind of, there's no way to get things perfectly right, no matter how many times you do it. Her challenge really is to stop trying to optimize and just continue to live. In that way, I wanted it to be kind of a little bit different than the time loop that, like, they have to learn to be a nicer person to get out of it. Like, it's her choice in a way to get out of it.
And that definitely does feel different than other time loop films. And one of the things I like about this version of time loop is not going too much into like the science of it. Like there's a moment in Looper which is one of my favorite films. And there's a bit where Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are like sat opposite each other at the table. And Bruce Willis is like talking about the time loop stuff. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt starts to ask a question. He's just like, don't even think about it. It'll fry your brain. And then they just never talk about it again. Cause when you cut that out, it's like the opposite of, because Max recommended that I watch Primer, and you knew that I was going to talk about it.
You're gonna fucking hate that.
And honestly, have you seen it, Emily? Yeah.
Primer. Oh yes, I have seen it. It's exactly the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
It's the opposite, and I much prefer your direction with it, because Primer is impressive for a lot of ways, but oh my god, I was like, really. There's so much like non-science, and I was just like, I was texting my brother who is a scientist, and he was like, yeah, it's basically like physics students being like, we should make a film.
Technobabble.
Yeah.
I was definitely in danger of, or I was that pretentious film student that's like, I'm going to make movies about philosophy, you know? And then you end up just like, you know, quoting Kant and Kierkegaard and stuff, and you sound like an idiot. Because I didn't want to go in that direction with science, which I know so much less about. There's no reason to do that. And I think the interesting thing about movies is that they don't have to follow the logic of reality at all. Like, they just have to follow the logic of their own world.
Exactly.
So the logic of her world is that there's a time loop in this one certain place. She discovers it and she gets to go through it. And she may or may not be the only one who gets to go through it.
And it's interesting you say about the philosophy, because you have this whole thread of Vindish, the mafia bike guy, who is obsessed with the art of war. And even that as like a parody of those characters is amazing. And it's so Berlin as well.
Based on an ex-boyfriend. Yeah.
It was too real. I was watching it. I was like, this has to be a person.
Definitely follow the obsession with the art of war based on a real person.
Your leads were wonderful as well. Yeah. I thought he was so he was so perfect for the role. I mean, they both were, but yeah, he was fantastic.
He is so great. His name is Tilo Herman. He is mostly a stage actor. He plays bad guys in Shakespeare.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. He had that joy of fucking with someone.
Yes. Yeah.
Really good.
He read The Art of War several times. He never read it. And then he was like, okay, now I'm studying The Art of War. I have my own copy.
Full method. So were there specific... I'm interested in how you worked on the story and whether it was something that, you know, you started with the time loop idea or you started with the bike idea and then it grew into something else, or was it, what was the process like?
In the pandemic, I wanted to make a story about Berlin. And I thought there are two really strong elements about Berlin that I'm interested in talking about. One is this very local underground DIY culture. I very soon thought like, oh, this revolves around bikes and Adidas tracksuits. Like that...
That's the currency.
Yeah, and I see, Hannah, that you're very on brand here today with your Adidas. And then the other element that I wanted to talk about was gentrification, Airbnb rentals, and just kind of like the selling out of the city and how there are these two kind of parallel cities existing at the same time. And while that exists in a lot of places, Berlin is like 15 years behind everywhere else. And I moved from Los Angeles and it felt like stepping back in time. So even just that, like the time travel of moving to Berlin and like sort of being in the 90s in a way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You have to pay with cash everywhere. Many of the trams are very old. Like a lot of things are very 90s. It was kind of like, how do I make a movie out of all these elements?
Mm.
Well, and I was always really interested in people's apartments and what they look like. And we started to kind of catalog all these locations in my mind, places that were kind of iconic in Berlin and places that I could shoot during the pandemic, like my friends' houses and outside. I had the bike theft storyline. And then I had this other storyline of a couple in an Airbnb apartment that has a portal into the past and all like the generations of people that have been there before this couple. So I wrote a treatment that way, and the more people I showed it to were like, this whole couple thing, that's a different movie.
Yeah.
My whole thing is that I write movies that are way too dense and have way too many themes and elements, and I always have to cut about half of what I wanted to say out in the beginning, and then people are still like, oh, that was really dense.
Wait, so is that the couple that we meet towards the end of the film who live next door, or that's a completely separate thing?
Completely different, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I did have this idea about, like, you know, the city and the country, and in the way that, like, gentrifiers encroach on the city, then also city people encroach on the country, and it's like everything is kind of a loop, a cycle, and the bikes are the same way. People steal bikes, and then they end up somewhere else. Like you see it in a shop and it's like, that's my bike. It was just stolen from me 6 months ago. And now I see somebody else riding it. There are all these things. And I had to really, I had to strengthen the character that was the through line of it, which ended up being Fatma. And I wanted it to be like the character that's very common to Berlin. That's very local, but it's also very overlooked. I wanted her to be Turkish German because they're like the biggest minority group in Berlin, not completely accepted by German society in a certain way. I wanted her to kind of be the through line. And that ended up being the idea that beat out all the other ideas to become the central idea, that it is like her story about trying to like better her life and how in trying understandably to better her situation in life, she actually turns into the type of person that she hates in the beginning.
It is funny hearing you say about the philosophy from earlier and like this idea of her choosing the time loop and going into it actively, because it does really change the feel. And Groundhog Day, I didn't realize how much tension there was between the writer and Bill Murray, because he basically wanted to move away from comedy.
Oh.
Which, it's funny because Groundhog Day is seen as this moment where he did move away from comedy, but it's still a comedy.
Yeah.
But he was really obsessed with the philosophy and only wanted it to be about that. But then they had this balancing act to do where the more they went into the philosophy, the less it became about him as a character and like what he's going through. And then it was like all these decisions about at what point do we arrive in the time loop? Do we discover the time loop with the character and as they live it? So what's interesting about Berlin Loop is like we're literally there, like we're there when she discovers it, right? But in something like Palm Springs, it was only on a rewatch that I realized that we're completely in the female character's perspective. Andy Samberg is already on loop whatever.
Yeah.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that tension between creative and actor when it comes to a time travel film as well, because that's the exact inverse of Back to the Future with Eric Stoltz, right? Eric Stoltz was really in his head about the philosophical side of like, mm-hmm. oh my God, I'm back in time and I'm interacting with my parents and yeah. playing it so serious and straight. And they're like, no, this is fun.
This is comedy.
This is not what we're doing at all.
Completely. And I think you don't get the comedy unless you play it for the tension, and you don't get the philosophical insight unless you also have some moments of lightness and it doesn't feel too film school-y.
Also, in terms of tone, like that balance between philosophy and humor, this is one of the elements that, again, I think you did so well in Berlin Loop, is the parody of like the advertisements for the buildings and that kind of thing. Of there's this obvious theme about gentrification, but until we see the advert for this huge corporation, we're still like, is it, like, what direction is it going to go, you know? And then it's so clear because of the tone of that section.
Thanks. I mean, I always saw it as like lighthearted and funny, but not a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
You can't take yourself too seriously, kind of funny.
It's character comedy, right?
Yeah.
It's not like punchlines. It's, you know, Windisch comes in and immediately you're like, oh, okay, this is not taking itself.
Yeah.
Like, this is not Primer, right? This is not doing a Primer.
Not Primer. This is not about science. This is not. Yeah. No. This is not a Christopher Nolan film.
No. Oh my God. Yeah. I will say the one thing I truly love about Primer, there's lots of things I like about Primer, but like the one thing I really like about Primer is time travel as an accident when you're trying to do something else.
I read this book called Recursion by Blake Crouch that was one of the big influences or inspirations for this. It's about a scientist who creates time travel accidentally.
Right.
While she is trying to solve or cure Alzheimer's and memory loss.
Wow.
She creates a machine that allows somebody to, when they remember something, to capture that memory and catalog it. And she thinks it's just going to be like a catalog to help people with Alzheimer's remember their memories or keep track of them. But what it actually does is takes you back into that memory, and then you start over from that memory, but just you, the one person. So now you kind of change your timeline from there.
Yeah.
Everything that would have happened in the previous version is called a dead memory. So it no longer exists in that previous way, but everybody who was part of that previous timeline has like a headache or some of these false memories.
Oh.
Eventually, as more people do this, the whole world is infected with this false memory syndrome.
Yeah.
Very few people get the chance to actually go back into a memory.
That's fascinating.
That's such an interesting use of the...
Yeah.
The timelines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a different way. Yeah.
Interesting reading prose when it does that, because I read the short story that Arrival is based on, the Ted Chiang.
I love his stuff. Yeah.
I loved Arrival the first time I watched it. And then the second time, I just wasn't that. There wasn't more to it.
The film's okay. There's still like his writing is, yeah.
But yeah, the writing, I didn't expect to be so blown away by it having already seen the film twice. And the way that you can play with what information you're giving at what point. The kind of ability to see through time is affecting her, and what that does to her conversations and how he plays with the delivery of it. And it's just, translating that to film, there's a lot that they did well in that. I mean, with any Villeneuve, it's all a bit dead, isn't it? But like beautiful, stunning, and also all the actors are just like on 50%.
It works better for some material than it does.
What does it work with? Yeah.
I think I like it with June. Like, I think it works well with June. I think it works a lot better with June than it does with like David Lynch's take on June, which is like fascinating.
But very different.
The material lends itself more to his style, like his aesthetic.
Once you knew you were doing a time loop film, because I feel like sometimes you can go too far into the research, right? And you end up watching so many and reading so many things that you're like, well, it's all been done. Like, how could I possibly do it?
I definitely went there. I watched a lot of time loop movies. I was like, it's all been done. I mean, what's very cool about Palm Springs is it kind of takes Groundhog Day from the end of, or near the end of the movie, essentially. And it takes it so much
further. Yeah.
It pushes the idea in so many different directions.
Mm.
How could that amazing movie be pushed in more directions than there already was? And yet it kind of does.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting. And then I was like, oh, maybe it doesn't even make sense to try this anymore. But the context of Berlin, while that is in Run Lola Run, I felt like there's something unique about this moment. And I want it to be a lighter tone, more like a Groundhog Day, not quite as funny as a Palm Springs, but like a lighter tone than Run Lola Run. And as we all know, Germans are so great at comedies. I've got a movie coming from Germany that shows all the comical sides of Berlin. The fact that so many people wear 90s Adidas tracksuits, not ironically, is just so behind the rest of the world. And that in itself is just, to me, that is the whole comedy of it.
Yeah.
And then just saying what I want to say about time loops and about our constant like need for progress and how that sort of destroys the fabric of community. And because Berlin is such like, I mean, it is a very anti-capitalist city in a way, but also it's just people are way less ambitious. Like when I first moved here, somebody said, Berlin is where ambition comes to die. It's a different kind of freedom. Not feeling like you always have to be the best or conquer something. In a weekend, I made a short film that was like 3 or 4 minutes that was her stealing a bike as kind of a proof of concept. And then I got into this lab and I had this, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do, now that I'm in the lab, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to make the movie. It's going to be like micro budget. I'm just going to do it. And then I couldn't write the script. I kept on getting lost. I could not finish a draft. And then I saw this amazing Mark Duplass video where he talks about how he writes a first draft and how he basically watches 2 or 3 movies, the closest comps to his movie. He'll write down beat for beat what happens in the movie and then just steal that structure. Exactly.
What?
That's how he gets to the first draft.
Wow.
So I was like, Groundhog Day. Okay. And like use as much of the stuff from what I have in all of my different drafts and outlines as I can. I dropped some stuff because it didn't fit. And I was like, okay, how's this going to work? Is this just going to be a ripoff of Groundhog Day? And it's absolutely not.
I would never have said that would have been your North Star when it came to writing this at all. No.
Lola Run, maybe.
Yeah.
Like stylistically, but still it's so different.
Well, and the tone as well, the right? The tone is so different. Yeah. Because even down to the comic elements of Berlin Loop, it's very German, very dry in its way. It's very, very different from what Groundhog Day is doing. Yeah.
I took that just in terms of like, okay, where is Phil emotionally at this moment? Like how many, you know, like there are not nearly as many loops as Groundhog Day.
What does he say? Like 10,000 years or something, Harold Ramis said that it takes place across the course of.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not nearly as many different things happen as happened in Groundhog Day. We shot the movie in 10 days and it rained a lot and a lot of it was outside. So we end up cutting several scenes. And the biggest thing that we cut was every time she goes to the house in Brandenburg, she's supposed to encounter the gay couple. and she rejects them and rejects them and rejects them until the last time where she befriends them. And they're so good. Like, I love those guys.
Yeah.
We had no time to shoot most of their scenes. So they got cut from most of the movie. But that was sort of like her, the last repetitive thing that happens is that these guys always try to like welcome her to the neighborhood and get her to stay. And then she always chooses to go back through the time loop and like try again. And they're basically like, slow down. You don't have to be so ambitious. You don't have to conquer the world. They're the last chance at community because she's rejected all the other chances at community. The skate park, the bike theft gang, everybody she's rejected. That was like the one structural thing that unfortunately never made it to the movie because we never shot it.
10 days.
10 days. Yeah, 10 days. Hearing about the production and understanding what it takes to make a film on no money. I still didn't realize how quickly you shot it. That is, yeah, really, really impressive.
We had 10 days of principal photography, and then we had 2 days of just like running around with bike stuff, no sound, limited crew.
Because the sound design is, it helps so much with the bikes. And actually, I was going to ask you the moment where, it's funny because it's such a specific shot, but it's because of the trailer. When Fatma is leaving the house and she turns around and there are the bikes that cross, and it's almost this De Sica like bicycle thief shot of everyone going past. Did you have people lined up, or was it just that's Berlin and so there are bikes everywhere?
Oh no. Well, that was orchestrated. It was orchestrated, and what is probably goes unnoticed is that one of the bikes, well, no, you see that it's the orange Peugeot, and it's supposed to be Vindish on the orange Peugeot. So our line producer got on like the Vindish costume, the trousers, the shoes, because the Vindish actor wasn't there that day, and he's like on the bike.
It's amazing, isn't it, where you spend so long trying to get a thing right because it matters so much to the script, and then no one even notices.
I think it's nice sometimes to have those little things that, like, the more, especially in a time loop movie.
Yeah, you need it. You need it.
Like, oh, that's actually the first encounter or another encounter with the bike. Mm-hmm. It's like the meaning changes depending on where you are in your digesting of it.
There's a different kind of like density to everything that happens in a time loop movie, right? Because everything is being repeated ad infinitum, right? If you look at Groundhog Day, like the number of times that we see him step into the puddle with Ned, right?
Yeah.
You know, those moments stick out in your head so much more because of the repetition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a great way to do a low budget movie too, because
just use the same shots.
It's economical. Yeah, it's smart.
The main actress, Daria, she, like, we just had a code language. She's like, what time loop is this? Because we had five. So she would know emotionally where she was.
Yeah.
She knows the scenes inside and out. She knows the character and all of, like, the character beats. And then we're shooting, and it's like, today we're at scene, you know, 172. And she's like, okay, I know it's about, what time loop is this? And I'm like, 4. And then she's like, okay, I know where I am. And immediately she was there at exactly that emotional beat of the script, like that version of the character, you know, and doing a bunch of scenes back to back where like, now you're in time loop 3, now you're in time loop 5, now you're in time loop 1. It's like...
Well, because the repetition of filmmaking as well, that must have been maddening at moments, right?
Yeah. It's like you're walking down the street. Okay, now you're walking down the street with a completely different intention. Okay, now you're walking down the same street with a new intention.
Yeah.
And did you find that then in the edit, were you also able to change things that you didn't expect that you had filmed because you had all of these different time loops to go and like pick out from?
We really used what we shot for X time loop in X time loop. Particularly because Daria was so specific. She was so good at being in that moment that it is. And also we shot closer and closer as we went. So we shot mostly everything in the first time loop on like 35 lenses. And then we'd go to like 55 and then we'd go to 75. I found that in the editing, we could really kind of, we could recall previous time loops in a time loop. And so that allowed us to like mix some of the footage more.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like the dead memory idea, or the dead timeline. She's here, but there's like a false memory or a moment of the previous timeline that she's back in.
Mm-hmm.
We took advantage of reusing as many shots as we could. Because
you have to, yeah.
You have to.
I can't believe you managed to do all of that in 10 days.
Yeah.
Plus the bicycle stuff. The bicycle days were us and a couple of cargo bikes. The camera was in a cargo bike for a lot of it. And then she's on her bike. And then we had a bike wrangler to just, you know, bring us different bikes that she's stealing. Like, okay, now she has to have this bike. There were a lot of bike mix-ups where it's like, okay, now it's next week and we're trying to get back to that same white bike, but not that white bike, it's the other white bike.
Yeah, how many bike locks did you have to buy for this movie?
I went to Decathlon one day and I was just like, okay, we're buying every kind of bike lock.
So wait, so you mentioned Groundhog Day as being like the one point of reference in terms of like structurally that you were looking at really early on. What were the other sort of big ones that you were looking at time loops wise in the writing process for this?
Run Lola Run, of course.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a time loop, but there's no explanation of time travel at all. And I really liked how things also evolve slightly differently every time. But it's not really talked about that she knows more, she has more information. It's just like she avoids the car the next time, or she runs faster, or, you know, like things incrementally change. So that also was a big kind of structural influence, because everybody tells you as you're writing things that you like, but this is not what happens in time loop movies, or like, but this doesn't follow. And it's like, but
you get to decide.
You make up your own rules.
Yeah.
I've been trying to write a vampire movie forever, and this is the same problem with vampires. There's so many vampire rules from all the different vampire movies, but then there's never the same, exactly the same rules in different movies.
Because ultimately, fiction is fun nonsense that we get to decide what we do with,
absolutely,
right? You can shape it however you like. It can be southern vampires in America. It can be they're 1,000 years old and they were Egyptian. It doesn't matter.
They're
as
roommates.
Long as it's fun, as long as we understand what's going on, right?
Yeah. And actually, it's funny you say vampires, because again, looking up Groundhog Day, kind of remember his name, but the writer, the original idea he had came from an idea. He was trying to write a vampire story, and he was thinking about how, like, if you lived for eternity, how that would feel. And that's how he ended up finding this, like, okay, but rather than, it was a budget constraint, it was like, we can't shoot something that goes through the whole of time, so we have to pick one day and just do it with that. And that's how that was his way in.
My major interest is time. There's so many directions you can go with time. Like, vampires are a great example of that. Time loops, like
memory, like you said.
Yeah, history.
You read any Ishiguro?
I just read Never Let Me Go for the first time.
Everything he wrote is always memory, right? That's so core to everything. Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm.
I love Korean movies also for that reason. They're like, I was trying to look it up today. There's this movie I saw quite a long time ago that was like this guy repeats the same day and like the girl never remembers him. And it's this kind of like sad Korean romance. I couldn't find the name of the film, but there's just so many variations of what we get stuck in time, our own memories or bad things that happen to us or whatever you want to get stuck on. You're stuck in time, the more that you're stuck in your mind thinking about that. And that is kind of like the entire point of meditation and transcendental philosophy is like, don't get stuck in your time loop inside your mind.
Yeah.
Even something like Sliding Doors.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah.
Russian Doll, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Russian Doll was amazing.
But time can go in so many different directions beyond... Yeah. Time loop movies.
That's so interesting that you said about memory there as well, because that I was listening to, I think it was like an old Radio Lab or something recently about memory, in that the more that you fixate on a specific memory, it's not like a drawer that you're opening in a filing cabinet in your head and taking out a perfect replica of it. Every time you remember it, you're recreating it.
Mm.
And you're in changing. The act
of recreating it. Exactly. You're altering it, right?
I've heard that Radiolab as well.
Right. Okay.
And I've listened to it several times because that too, yeah. it floors me. The idea that this thing that we think is such a huge part of who we are is so unstable, and all the more unstable how much we return to that place that seems so core.
We live in those time loops, right? If you're living in your head and you're living in repeating these memories and degrading and changing these memories, you're literally living in a time loop all the time.
Do you remember that Black Mirror episode with the snow globe, the Christmas one?
No.
Is that John Hamm?
Yeah, it's a Christmas special.
John Hamm is in a Black Mirror?
And Martin Freeman. Is it Martin Freeman?
I can't remember. It's been a really long time since I saw it, because that's quite early.
They block people and they grey them out. Like in real life, when someone's blocked, they're greyed out.
It's Rafe Spall.
Ah, so, okay.
Oh, and the writer of Groundhog Day is Danny Rubin.
Rubin, that was it. Yeah,
Danny Rubin, yeah.
Yeah.
Just getting my tabs open.
Gotta get all the tabs.
Yeah. Like, you just went back into your memory drawer.
Another reference that I wanted to mention is Carlo Rovelli's book, The Order of Time. I don't know if you've read that.
I don't know that.
No.
He's a physicist, and he writes in a very poetic way about time, and essentially how like physics has discovered that time does not run in a direction at all. And in fact, like the length a second lasts changes depending on your altitude, depending on all sorts of things, on where you are on the earth.
Right.
The lack of real existence or actual definition to time makes it clear that we are constantly time traveling. We can be in our own time loop in our head, but we can also, I mean, and this is also like, you know, metaphysics and consciousness studies and all these kind of people that seem loopy, but are also actually connected to physics. Like they're talking about expanding your consciousness so that you are conscious of things outside of your material reality, where you are. Like the more that we become open to the universe in the same way that atoms across the universe can talk to each other or do things at the same time, the more we are time traveling. We're traveling across the universe. I could be in a place that my grandmother was, and my grandmother or great grandmother or great great grandmother could also really be there. Not just in my imagination. Stuff like this, where it's like, it's hard to recommend books on physics to people. You could make movies and explore different ways of being in the world, or, you know, different levels of consciousness that people may or may not really experience or, you know, be conscious to, and help people time travel in the way that they maybe already are and just don't notice.
I love that.
I don't think we can top that.
No, I was, as you were talking, I was like, I think this is the ending, and then Max is going to be like, call to action.
Like and subscribe, yeah.
And check out Berlin Loop.
Check out Berlin Loop.
Yes, yes. On Instagram, we're Berlin_loop_film. And there you can find our account, of course, which is sometimes active. But we also have a link tree that will say like when our next screenings are. We also take our personality quiz. We've created a Berlin personality quiz so you can know which Berlin Loop character you are the most like.
Amazing. I'm terrified that I'm Windish, to be honest.
Pretty sure I am.
So Jenny took it. I'm just going to out her a little bit. And she got she got the personality type gentrifier, and she was like, what?
Did she help create the quiz?
No. I made it. And then she was like, wait, does everybody get this? And I was like, and then I looked at all the people who had taken it. And I was like, no, not everybody gets it.
You're the only one.
But everybody who got gentrifier wrote me angry.
Wow. Oh, that's hilarious.
It's very on brand for the gentrifiers to write you angry.
Yeah, yeah. A strongly worded letter. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. It has been an absolute pleasure.